This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now. A lot going on today. Believe it or not, we do have a president of the United States. He's at the G20. He is going to a global alliance on hunger. I assume he's against it. And then he's going to go to lunch. And then he's going to call it a day. Also, I guess we're giving, like, what, $2 billion to the Amazon? And then we find out that he lands in Brazil. No red carpet. Just a couple of guys show up. Red carpet for China. Why? Because he decided to side with Lula, whose idol is Castro. So he was wondering why the socialist, who is now leading the BRICS conference, has turned against him. When Bolsonaro sits there like Trump, he sits there in exile, even though he was probably won that election and should be running again. But this is how he goes out. Everything that Joe Biden did with his foreign policy was wrong. And that's why I am so glad the end is near. Before we get to our next guest, Congressman Ryan Zinke, one of our all-time favorites, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Look, I think Democrats are in the wilderness, as you just said before. There is no clear leader of the party. There are a lot of governors and other people who might emerge, maybe people we don't know about yet. But there is no clear leader of the party right now.
Jen Psaki, who, by the way, made a really good transition. He's a very good host. So honesty, that's what we are getting from some Dems as they begin to wrap their heads around the historic thumping at the hands of the Trump. We hear from them in their own words.
Number two.
There's a reason why no one in the conference came and defended him, because we had all seen the videos he was showing of the girls that he had slept with. He'd brag about how he would crush ED medicine and chase it with an energy drink so he could go all night.
That is Senator Mark Wayne Mullen talking about Matt Gaetz. Nominations flooding the news zone, and critics, skeptics, and analysts weigh in on the latest non-traditional selections. From RFK to Gaetz to Tulsi, Dems scramble to keep up.
Number one.
If you really want to be concerned about that, that they have the absolute ability to run the table, at least for the next 2 years. And that's what I think we should all be concerned on, not small tweets or, you know, random kinds of appointments.
Trump reflects, reacts, and basks in the glory of the remarkable historic victory as he hosts a major gala at Mar-a-Lago while putting yet another legend to come out of the shadows and support his case. And that was Sylvester Stallone. So welcome back.
Great to be with you. Exciting times.
Right. So this is a great time to be in the majority, stay in the majority. Listen, Congressman Zinke, I didn't think that when I watched Kevin McCarthy get ousted, with such a slim majority, I thought you just basically signed the minority certificate, that there's no way. But you guys, it's a slim margin. We don't know exactly the number yet, but it looks like you held the majority. How much does that mean?
Well, it means everything if you want to get anything done, right? The magic number is 218. I think we're probably going to be in the 221 area, so we'll have a slight majority. But in order to affect policy, the House is a 51%. So you need to make sure that every Republican toes together, or you have bills that are bipartisan. There are some bills that are bipartisan. You know, the farm bill historically has been bipartisan. There's other opportunities. A lot of our land bills, when public access, are largely bipartisan. But the hot bills of what the president wants, no doubt we won't get any support from the Democrats when we talk about securing the border. That's been pretty clear. Tax cuts to make sure that America can stay competitive. And, look at the President Trump's agenda. It's pretty clear. During his first 4 years, as secretary, I used to say, look, a promise made is a promise kept. If you want to know what President Trump's doing, just follow what he said in the campaign. And he's going to do exactly what he said in the campaign. And I think his picks for the cabinet member kind of reflects that.
I want to get into that. I also want to talk about what's happening in Ukraine. You got this Navy SEAL background and what's happening with Hezbollah. They just took out another commander. But I want to talk big picture. If you were on the Trump team, you were targeted. You were one of them. Trump was not accepted in Washington by his own people. We found out that Madison Kelly, who were great Americans but were working against him, thought he was totally unworthy for the position. H.R. McMaster wrote about in his book because they didn't like him either. And McMaster was critical of Trump at times, but for the most part, I happen to know firsthand that he's happy he won. So do you think that's over? That if you're on the Trump team, that if you ever walked against traffic as an 18-year-old, that that is going to come up because you were targeted simply because you were Interior Secretary.
Well, I think it was clear. Well, you know, we came in and we knew there was a deep state. And then, tongue in cheek, you know, I brought a set of hip waders. I should have brought a boat. It is much deeper and damaging than we think. And look, when you ask us, you know, when I say us, the American people, is there a government department, agency, division that you have full trust and confidence in? It's crickets. That's because we have lost faith with our government institutions. That's what Trump has promised to bring back, transparency and accountability. And look, they are going to, you know, I always say in Washington, D.C., you know, normally, you know, as a Navy SEAL, I never divided the world between Republicans and Democrats. But in Washington, D.C., 94% of that town voted for Joe Biden, and you 6%, the other 6% don't work in government. So when you go in there as a secretary, you face a very monolithic group, and about a third are absolutely in the resistance mode that find every opportunity to delay, prevent, lie, cheat, steal, and we've seen it. And, you know, Trump, even when he wasn't in office, you know, look at the viciousness that Department of Justice went after him. I mean,
four indictments, one conviction.
Or New York. Or, you know, and when I was a secretary, you know, they were shooting at Trump, but most of the rounds were landing on me because Trump was out of range. But I went through every day. You know, anyone could launch a complaint.
Jared Kushner almost went to jail.
Oh, well, and I think Mike Flynn probably had to pay $20 million, what his bill was for attorneys. They haven't changed, and what President Trump has promised to do was bring back accountability, bring back transparency, and restore faith in government. That's a big task. But
I
can tell you, his cabinet members are pipe hitters.
So, you know, the UFC, we're watching the UFC fight, and I expect him to get that warm welcome right in New York City, but not like that, according to everybody on Saturday
electric.
Night.
Electric.
Yeah. And Joe Rogan was saying it's never been this loud. He's never heard it so loud. He does every major UFC event. Then I'm watching this dance, and everyone's like, Brian, what's the big deal? I think it's a huge deal. When when a West Virginia running back gets a touchdown, he starts doing the dance. And then I'm watching this happen in the San Francisco 49ers. And then I'm watching black and white players doing the Trump tribute. This is a big deal. Because remember they said that he was Hitler, he was a fascist, he was racist, and was going to divide America? Someone forgot to give the memo to Americans who are finally making their own decisions. Don't you agree?
Well, everyone loves a champion. You know, Teddy Roosevelt said the same thing, the respect for the man in the arena. You're talking about a president who made an enormous comeback. People were hitting him hard. I mean, in the courts every day. You had Department of Justice visiting his house. And we can go through. And who won? Here comes the champion. And I think that moment, you're mm-hmm. right, it seemed like a Muhammad Ali fight. I mean, it was probably on steroids, and there's the champion. Now it's going to be our commander-in-chief. And look, he's going to do exactly what he said he's going to do. And yeah, to your point, he has the Senate. The Senate's a tricky business because they don't have 60. They'll have the House, but the House actually has to behave themselves and act together with a unified purpose. And then on his cabinet members, he looked at, you know, I was secretary for 2 years. I had 17 Senate confirmed appointments, 17. After 2 years, I only had 7 out of 17 because this is what they do. They slow you down. They delay the FBI investigations, the Office of Government Ethics. And in one case,
they only meet 3 days a week instead of five days a week. But that's up to Thune now. Can't Thune just say 7 days a week, we're working until we get this stuff confirmed, unless I get some efficiency? Why does the minority have such a vote?
Well, and these recess appointments, that is a lot more difficult than just, you know, being in recess.
And what happens? You don't get paid, number one.
Well, yeah, both House and the Senate have to be in recess. And then the recess is only good for the term of Congress, which is 2 years. But you can do it with 51% of the votes in the Senate. But as I understand it, with the parliamentarian, amendments are made in order. That means that every senator will get an opportunity to put amendments on those recess, and you can imagine what those amendments are going to be on the Democrat side. And I think some of them probably would pass. So I think the recess appointments, you can probably get some, but not all.
But no, I wasn't on recess. I was just saying that he could just schedule these nominations then the votes and just stay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, get there on Monday and stay to Sunday.
Well, he controls the on and off switch of that little light on top of the Capitol. Matter of fact, when that light on top of the Capitol is lit, I call it the most underused light bulb in Washington, D.C.
Because you don't work enough.
That tells you when the Senate is in session. So you're right. He can force these guys in there to do their job.
To me, the recess is typical leverage Trump. Tariffs, leverage Trump. He said, how do I get you to act? Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to do recess appointments. I'm outraged. Well, do you not want to do recess appointments? Maybe you're going to get some people nominated. And then all of a sudden, that to me is what he's doing. So he's got.
He is a master at this. And, you know, but I think you're right. I mean, he looks at the last time, look, you didn't give me my appointments. So this time I'm going to look at ways to go around you if you don't do your job. And the recess is certainly on the table. As Thune said, and Thune can't hold them in session until they do their job. So I think just having Trump put a little muscle on the Senate is probably a good thing.
I know you don't vote on this. That's the Senate side. But when it comes to Matt Gaetz, who's never tried a case and has pretty much rocked your chamber for 3.5 weeks as they try to pick a speaker and made it impossible, the voice to remove. I personally, I think he really hurt and embarrassed the country. Forget about Republicans. But here's what some Republicans have said on the Senate side, that we'll have to eventually vote for him. He can only lose, what, 3 or 4 votes, depending on what happens in Pennsylvania. Cut one.
There are many serious allegations pending against him.
He's got a really steep hill to climb to get lots of votes, including mine.
Senator Cornyn and Senator Rounds on should his ethics investigation be released. Got two.
I think there should not be any limitation on the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation, including whatever the House Ethics Committee has generated.
We should have access to it one way or another based on the way that we do all of these nominations.
Your thoughts about the ethics investigation would stop the day he resigned and about him as a attorney general.
Well, this is where the Senate advise and consent. And consent is, and they have some serious concerns. I would imagine the Senate is going to dig deep and say, "Look, we're gonna look at the investigations as they are to make sure the allegations are just allegations and not fact." So I think that's probably where the Senate's going to go. Certainly, Matt Gaetz is the most controversial.
Did you get along with him?
You know, I did. He's very, very sharp. And if President Trump says, I want to be a disruptor, especially in Department of Justice, I mean, Matt Gaetz fits that mold. I assume, like all the cabinet members, they're going to also stack him with a team of competent people that have been around for a while. But I think the challenge in the Senate, whether it's an attempted recess or not, is pretty clear.
All right, we'll see. I mean, Mark Wayne Mullen says I'll be open-minded, but he also has said personally basically can't stand the guy. So he's going to be open to that. When we come back, what did Joe Biden just do to give Ukraine additional chances to do maximum damage to Russia that he should have done over a year ago? We'll discuss that with the former Navy SEAL, former Interior Secretary, and now back to being Congressman Ryan Zinke in Montana in just a moment. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. So we know now through a report today over the weekend that Joe and Washington Post and New York Times Congressman Zinke that we are now allowing all restrictions lifted on the use of attackums against Russia. And that means the UK and the rest of our NATO allies will follow suit. This is in response to them bringing in 12,000 North Korean troops. And there's a Bloomberg report saying they're ready to give up to 100,000 into that region. What are your thoughts as a Navy SEAL, a guy who fights wars?
Well, look, you know, I've been to war a lot of times. And I've never been on a mission without clear objectives and a plan. So that's the same thing. We're $200 billion in, and now we're sending longer range, more sophisticated systems in there. Now blank
check. Well, they're
check.
In. We were told they couldn't use them.
Well, yeah, but now they got blank check to use them as you. But what's the plan? What's the objectives? You know, I assume on the Russian side, it's no NATO and access to the Crimean Peninsula. I assume on the Zelensky has said his victory plan is. Having the Crimean Peninsula and continuing advancing operations, offensive operations in that section of Russia, but without a plan. So I think this is an escalation. Obviously, now you have Korean troops in there. You have, you know, which is to a degree has been a surrogate of China. No one talks about Venezuela. Look, the world's falling apart, and Donald Trump is you know his time is coming as a commander in chief. But look, he's going to be handed a world
a
that
grenade.
Is unstable. Absolutely.
He's going to be handling a grenade. But here's the thing.
With six pens.
So I asked Michael Walls today if he has been consulted on this. Have they, President-elect and his team, been consulted on it? And they said no. So you can't even say they're working in coordination, sadly. So he said that, you know, but they did speak for an hour or 2 hours. It mostly was about Ukraine. On the other side, as we look at the Middle East, basically, Israel has been told, Netanyahu has been told, get it done before I get there. And they took out another Hezbollah leader. And when you see those tunnels being blown up and these leaders being killed, do you think that Israel's addressing a problem that was only going to get worse and they do have to finish the job now and Iran has never been more vulnerable? Do you think we have a chance for long-term, a tranquil Middle East long-term? Israel finishes the job?
Well, on two parts on Israel. One is I don't think they're going to have to occupy Gaza and eradicate the spider holes and establish, you know, order. And Lebanon, you know, when you have the missile threat as they are, and those missiles can be armed with significantly, you know, higher firepower, is that they'll have to occupy that until there's a force in there that can clean it up. Those are the two principal threats. And then, of course, you have over the top with Iran that is vulnerable. But what we face is this. We face Russia, obviously, in Ukraine. We face China, who's supplying parts, materials, and pressing on Taiwan and, of course, the Pacific. You have Venezuela we don't talk about. Venezuela is in our backyard, Monroe Doctrine, and we're feeling the effects of Venezuela on our streets because they've dumped out their prisons, their insane
asylums. Well, we made a stupid deal with them and said that if you have free and fair elections, we'll stop buying your oil again.
Well, and we're back on track of doing that. So we're taking heavies rather from Canada, as we should, our ally. And we're taking the heavies from Venezuela again.
What do you mean by heavies?
Criminals? Oh, heavy crudes. Oh. You know, a lot of Houston relies on crudes, heavy crudes. So we're taking that, once again, you know, policy on energy.
Well, that's going to change. Don't you think?
It is absolutely going to change. One of the best picks, I think, is Doug Burgum and Chris Wright. Both those guys I know well. And look, you know, when I came in, we were 8.3 million barrels a day and declining. Two short years,
why don't you
we're 12.5.
Hold that thought. We'll talk to you again right on the other side. Back in a moment. More with Congressman Zinke. Brian Kilmeade here.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Look, I think Democrats are in the wilderness. As you just said before, there is no clear leader of the party. Mm. Joe Biden is going to be out of office shortly. Kamala Harris just lost the election. There are a lot of governors and other people who might emerge, maybe people we don't know about yet. Right. But there is no clear leader of the party right now.
It's Jen Psaki being honest. It's not that unusual. Mitt Romney, when he lost, no one said, okay, I know who's next. You know, after John McCain lost, they knew he was done. You know, he went back to the Senate, so there was no clear leader. But there's absolutely nobody close. The only person that people like to see is Barack Obama. But I'll tell you what, he is damaged goods now. And so is his wife, who came out angry and disconnected to America. That whole I don't like America attitude doesn't fly anymore, and I'm very happy to say that. Miranda Devine joins us now at the New York Post. Her story today is a major one, just basically how Nancy Pelosi is finished and no one deserves more of the blame than her. And a lot of people feel as though they're disconnected from Hakeem Jeffries, who should be the voice and face of the party, but not while Nancy Pelosi's around. Miranda Devine, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty disrespectful, I think, to Hakeem Jeffries that she wants to keep hanging around. She's just filed the papers to run it again. She'll be 88 by the time Donald Trump finished his second term. And she just is shameless. She runs around pretending that she's some sort of master strategist. And basically, that's a myth, because if you look at what the Democrats are like now, they're in ruins. They've lost the White House, the House, the Senate, and the popular vote. They were rejected from one coast to the other, even in San Francisco. Pelosi's hometown had a 7-point swing to Donald Trump. And she's the only speaker in history to have lost the control of the House twice. So why would she hang around? She's a failure. And yet she's running around doing all these interviews with the New York Times and so on, blaming Joe Biden, the guy that she pushed out to bring in Kamala Harris, who was an abject failure from the beginning. So I think enough. She needs to leave. She's been a very divisive force in the country. She's been terrible for her own party. I don't know why they put up with it. They're now, just now, starting to speak out against her and being quite vicious.
I mean, the Congressional Black Caucus came out and said to Axios, essentially, he's being disrespectful to Hakeem Jeffries, who really had no voice. And he was meeting with the president, trying to talk to him, see where he was at about possibly dropping out. The president would meet with him and make statements like, only God Almighty would force me out. And it was Nancy Pelosi's call. And they still haven't spoken yet. There's no debate about it. She's the one who did it. And she has intimated, too. She said, the men didn't do anything, meaning Clinton and Obama. So I had to step in. John Fetterman says she's embraced this godmother. She's the enforcer. And now she's blaming Biden. Well, you can't have it both ways. You got to have you got what you wanted. And now you're still blaming Biden. He's 100% right.
He is 100% right. And do you know the godmother image? It's been so embraced within the party that during the DNC convention that anointed Kamala Harris, you saw Dems walking around with these buttons with Pelosi's face on them and, you know, the Godfather movie image, and Pelosi called the godmother. And, you know, that there's no better way to show that your party is being run like the mafia by this woman who's been in power for 20 years. She's had an iron grip on the party. And I guess you've got to take your hat off to her leadership skills, because she certainly has everyone in that party scared, but she's crushed them. And now that there is a little glimmer of speaking up, I can't believe that they would allow this woman with such flawed judgment. Mainly, I think, her hatred of Donald Trump has brought her undone.
Miranda. She lost me ripping up that State of the Union. I'm never going to forget how unacceptable that is, how bad it looked around the world. And Trump didn't see it. But to see her do that and to think that that's OK, and you think Trump is the disruptor trying to mess with the norms. You're going to tell me that would have been done by Tip O'Neill or John Boehner?
Yeah, 100% disgusting. She is so classless, such a vicious thing to do. And, you know, Trump shaking her hand and being all conciliatory, and always Trump tries to do deals, but she just refused to. She was a real obstruction and a sneaky behind the scenes, you know, beyond the call of duty. You just don't, that's not the role of the Speaker of the House, is to cripple the presidency and damage the country. And that's exactly what she did. She did whatever she could. The January 6th committee was a star chamber. You know, she's the one that made sure that Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro went to jail for contempt of Nancy Pelosi. She's ruthless. I'll give her that. A Republican I was talking to yesterday said she was like Genghis Khan. But I just don't know what good those kind of dictatorial skills have been for the party.
Miranda, you don't, you know it's not been good. And I'll tell you, that January 6th committee, which he made a big show, by not having any legitimate Republican opposition to make it a true, to make it a true, I guess, investigation, but Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, who were totally against the president by then, and the January 6th outcome, by not letting Jim Jordan and others get on that, she did something unprecedented, and then she put it in primetime. She put her whole reputation. Trump broke her mind. Also, you bring out the Capitol Police on camera, her daughter's documentary. She said she feels responsible because she could have called more National Guard in.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I don't even trust that documentary sort of semi-confession, because she orchestrates everything. There's no mistake, and it's her daughter. And by the way, she wants to ship her daughter into her seat so that she has a dynasty that she can keep controlling from the grave. She's really a one of a kind. You don't see many people like her. Even in politics here, I mean, she's I can't even describe the sort of evil and divisiveness that she's brought into Congress, that she's brought to the country. And, you know, she will shiv anyone in the back, including her supposed long-term friend Joe Biden, who, you know, she helped install, obviously. And, you know, the January 6th narrative that she's pretty much single-handedly crafted, and pretending after the summer of love, in which Democrats everywhere were all about defund the police and sponsoring these attack police riots, she then pretends to be the big champion of police, because she eulogizes these Capitol Police officers. And she, you know, she also co-opted General Milley. She has a very powerful personality, and she manages to sort of bully and cajole people to do what she wants.
Well, they're weak. I mean, Millie just hates Trump, so that made it easier.
It did, but she also shamed him after. Remember, he walked out into Lafayette Park when Trump was holding the Bible after the St. John's Church was torched by the Antifa rioters, BLM rioters. And Milley walked out there with him. Maybe it was bad judgment of his, but I don't think it was that much of a disaster. But he got completely ripped, and Pelosi after that pretty much owned him. And he got to the point where she'd managed to poison him so much against Trump that he was ringing the Chinese and telling them, don't worry, you know, if the president does something, I won't follow through on his orders.
I hear you. So there's a couple of things going on right now. I think there's a lot of people who are just coming to Trump's side because they realize this election win was so comprehensive. Minorities, progress in 49 of 50 states. They picked up 7 points in her district alone, and that no one doubts with the popular vote. And you know all the stats, to the point where we're watching NFL players dancing in the end zone doing the Trump dance, let alone the UFC fighters of all races, by the way, the ones that were taking a knee. I'm not saying specifically the ones, but there was a sense in the NFL that everyone was taking a knee, and that's just the way it's going to be when Trump's in office. And now they're celebrating him. And I'm just wondering in the big picture, what do you think about the morning show hosts on Joe and Mika going to meet with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, the most vicious detractors, unfair critics of him, and they met over the weekend?
Yes, I mean, the prime propaganda proponents of poison against Donald Trump. And here they are, they're in fear for their own jobs because MSNBC ratings have just gone through the toilet. You know, after calling him a fascist and a Nazi and propagating every single Hitler. Fake hoax about him for, you know, years and years, here they are. They turn around and they want to suck up to him. And, you know, I hope he doesn't accept their olive branch. I mean, he has met with them, but I'm sure it's just out of curiosity and interest to see how much they will grovel. And I hope he's laughing about it right now.
Yeah, it would be great to see him treated fairly. Don't kiss his hey, I like this nominee. I don't like this. Okay, fine. But they have not given him an ounce of discretion and grace in either victory. And they also pushed the Russia fake investigation, yeah. which really destroyed and almost got his son-in-law arrested and almost got his son arrested, my goodness,
yeah.
with Don Jr. So I give him credit for meeting with them. But if they feel as though they want to rehab their career, how they think they have any credibility is beyond me. The other thing that I thought was interesting is RFK. A lot of people are being critical. I was shocked to see one person open to it. And listen to Deborah Birx, the former White House coronavirus coordinator. And this is what she said about from vaccines to what we eat. Cut 21.
Well, we're not talking about eliminating good food. We're talking about using all of their ingredients in a way that is more healthy for Americans. And I think that's what people are calling for now. Mm-hmm. Europe did it years ago. And I think we're capable of doing that. We are really smart, high levels of technology. We can make food tasty without a lot of these additives because we can see that other groups are doing it in a small way. So we're not talking about eliminating the need for wheats and grains. We're talking about putting those together in a healthy way.
CBS was looking for her to tee off and talk about how how he's a voodoo doctor pretending to know food. He goes, no, that's a good point. She also said this, cut 20.
And I think what has confused people is we weren't clear about what COVID vaccines do and don't. And so now people are questioning, well, what do my childhood vaccines do and don't? And they don't understand that some of the vaccines that their children are getting protect them from both disease and create herd immunity. And some of them that they get are just for their child, like H flu and Pneumovax, to protect their child from getting very serious illness. And we're just not explaining all of this correctly.
So she's open to his questioning. He's like, what is wrong with questioning this stuff? I was stunned, and I was happily stunned to see her talk like a human being.
Yes. And look, at least she's being honest about this up to a point. I mean, she says we weren't clear about the COVID vaccine. It wasn't that they weren't clear. They lied about it.
Yep.
You know, Joe Biden lied about it from the podium. Fauci lied about it. They knew that it didn't prevent people from getting sick, but they insisted that it did. They knew that it wasn't if you didn't get the vaccine, you weren't killing other people. But they continued with that because they were so desperate to get everybody vaxxed and people were resistant. And so, with good reason. And I think RFK Jr. wrote a terrific book during the pandemic about all of this and about the sort of failure of the health experts to keep our trust. And I guess Birx is a public health professional. And so she sees the damage
yes.
that these lies have done to the trust of the public. And she's absolutely right. I mean, childhood vaccines, for the most part, are crucial to keeping children healthy and have saved a lot of lives over the years. I mean, I think there are way too many. But now parents are worried about all of them. And this is dangerous. So I think that RFK Jr. definitely has a point. And as Birx said, we need to, instead of just blithely saying, oh, no, these vaccines don't cause autism, for instance, we need to show parents what does cause autism.
Because they're worried. Because they're worried. Because
yes.
they see the numbers going up. And this is the lesson. When we bring up, when politicians like Donald Trump and people like Trump bring up legitimate questions, they say conspiracy theory, they marginalize it, you're being irresponsible. No, they're saying exactly what we're thinking about
yeah.
prices and all these things, what we're spending things on. whether vaccines, what we eat, and they're making good. And instead of entertaining RFK and what's he saying and engaging him, they want to say he's a kook. And they used to be a year and a half ago, they were praising him for his environmental work.
Well, look, he had a huge following in the Democratic Party, even though they stifled his campaign and wouldn't let him get on debate stages and did whatever it took to marginalize him, to the point that he then joined Trump. So there are a lot of people, a lot of Americans, who agree with at least some of what he says. And he's the only one saying it. And I think MAHA, Make Americans Healthy Again, was a really inspired slogan. And I think it helped Donald Trump win this landslide from coast to coast.
Absolutely. I think it's comprehensive. So, unfortunately, we have to end. We can go another hour. But check out Miranda Devine's look at Nancy Pelosi. And really, she's the best weapon for Republicans. And Democrats are beginning to realize it. Thanks, Miranda.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
And by the way, her book is called The Big Guy. And it's out now. She might be gone. Listen, when we come back, we'll be able to squeeze in some calls. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Elon Musk's new Department of Government Efficiency posted a job listing saying that they are looking for people willing to work 80-plus hours a week for no money. But you can't be surprised that the white African guy's first idea is slavery.
Yep, that's Michael Che, one of the few relatively funny moments, but predictable. Everything's a comedy race with them. But I thought the cold open was terrible, and I thought the weekend update was unusually bad. I really had trouble with that. But especially when you just have high expectations because you remember what that was. The anti-Trump stuff, I'm telling you, if you just lost, Joe and Mika just gave up all their integrity. And now, you don't believe a word they're saying because they hate Trump. He's the worst ever. He wins and they're trying to make amends. Number two, who's going to be left? Is late night comedy? Are they going to apologize to Jimmy Fallon, who had to apologize because he, air quotes, normalized Trump? Is Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert the last ones to be crying that he won? And all of a sudden, are they going to lose even less viewers? Are there going to be less anti-Trumpers in the world for them to draw from? Could they get below a 1? Carson used to get a 6. They're getting a 1.8, 1.8, and a 2. Getting crushed by Greg Gutfeld, who's on a 10 a little bit earlier. But there's a reason why Conan O'Brien's hosting the Emmys. Because the late night guys have no credibility. And Conan just pulled out of that. And he never talks politics. And his podcast is going great. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome everyone to 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Glad you're here. We know the President of the United States is in Brazil for the G20, where he's put in the back row of a picture. I guess Trump has been put in a few back rows. I haven't seen pictures like that, but of course China's front and center because Brazil is kissing their butt because they are now great allies with them because we seem to, Joe Biden loves Lula, this corrupt guy that they had to get out of prison to run against Bolsonaro. And now we have Joe Biden pledging $2 billion for the Amazon. Like we have to fix everybody else's backyard like ours is perfect. So fantastic. So he continues to talk about his climate agenda, which is why he is a former president and not the future president. This hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Goodwin and Dr. Marty McCary. Dr. McCary wrote a book very similar to Casey and Callie Means about just what's in our food supply, how pharmaceutical companies are benefiting from it, how we got to be able to eat healthier, but also trust the FDA again to regulate what's in our food. And that's what RFK Jr. wants to do. Perfect day for Dr. Marty McCary to talk about his book, Blind Spots, When Medicine Gets It Wrong and What It Means for Our Health. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Look, I think Democrats are in the wilderness. As you just said before, there is no clear leader of the party. There are a lot of governors and other people who might emerge, maybe people we don't know about yet. But there is no clear leader of the party right now.
Absolutely true. That's what we're getting from some Dems. They begin to wrap their heads around their historic loss. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
There's a reason why no one and the conference came and defended him, because we had all seen the videos he was showing of the girls that he had slept with. He'd brag about how he would crush ED medicine and chase it with an energy drink so he could go all night.
That is what Senator Mark Wayne Mullen said of Nebraska. As you see, we're finding out more and more that the nominations are somewhat causing some controversy with Gates and RFK. Others are not going to have such problems like Doug Burgum and Marco Rubio. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
If you really want to be concerned about that they have the absolute ability to run the table, at least for the next 2 years. And that's what I think we should all be concerned on, not small tweets or, you know, random kinds of appointments.
There you go. That's what Trump's 2 months from taking power, and the Dems are beginning to realize that they are stuck in third gear. We will talk about it as Trump reflects on his outstanding weekend as he gets ready to take over power. Michael Goodwin, is Donald Trump gradually beginning to win over his critics? He said yes to a request to meet with Joe and Mika.
Look, if people want to surrender, I think it's always good to accept their surrender. The fact that they went to Mar-a-Lago, talked about it publicly, I think is a reflection that they acknowledge not only that he won, but that implicitly he's not the monster they portrayed him to be. And I think, Brian, that there is a movement taking place, as you suggest, that Trump is kind of crashing through the culture of barriers too. I mean, you see him showing up at the fights and things like that, and you see the NFL players, even some of the college players, doing the Trump dance. I mean, that the Trump dance is now a thing across the country.
Where they used to take a knee. They were taking a knee at those games, and now they're dancing in tribute to him.
I think in many ways this is really – for a lot of American men, there's a kind of liberation going on here. And I don't mean in a sexual sense. I mean just that men can be men. They don't have to sort of be ashamed to be men. I think that's a good part of what we're seeing. But I think on a larger perspective for all Americans, there is a sense of being liberated from this overbearing culture that the Democrats, you can't say that, you can't think that, you're a racist, you're trans, what are your pronouns? All of that stuff, I think, has just worn people down, and even the people who feel like, I ignore it, yes, you can maybe personally ignore it, but it's in the wind. And I think that one of the things that Trump's victory has done, somewhat surprisingly, I must say, is just give people a sense that era is over. It's coming to a close. Now, look, we'll see if it lasts. There are other issues, too. I think the question of crime, right? Are some of those DAs and some of these mayors who lost races in high-crime cities, there is a sense that wheel has turned on that also. So I think there are a lot of things that come with this Trump victory that go well beyond just politics and just the power of the presidency. It's a cultural victory as well. And so when Joe Scarborough and Mika go down to basically give him their sword and surrender, I think that's smart on their part, but it's also an acknowledgement from some of his harshest critics that he won. He won. It's over. That election is over. That doesn't mean, even though I support him, it doesn't mean I have given up my right to disagree with him and to say so publicly. But it does reflect, I think, a change of the guard. And we're witnessing it. And I think it's terrific because, as I say, that old cultural, that old politics was killing us. It was sapping the life out of the
United
States.
And here's the thing is, Michael, we're used to disagreeing with presidents and senators and policy. I got it. But instead of doing it, they just made it so personal. They just made it so, he's losing his mind, remember? He's too old. He's not the same guy. He meanders at his events, go on too long. He's Hitler. He's a fascist. And now people just go, yeah, I don't think so. I'm ignoring. That's not what I think. We voted elsewhere, and they can't believe it. So they either can sit there and say, denounce the country and leave. Like, well, I hear Robert De Niro's leaving the country, which is great. I'm hoping to get confirmation on that. Either you leave the country or you realize that you're out of step and you need to revisit it. You really are almost somebody in a rage, incapable of rational thought. Now, I want to get to your take on some of Trump's picks. The most controversial is Matt Gaetz. Reince Priebus spent the weekend at Mar-a-Lago, and here's what he told ABC, Cut 13.
He made it very clear to me that the Matt Gaetz pick is not three-dimensional chess to help another nominee get through, that this was what he wanted to have happen. And when Republicans voted in impeachment against Donald Trump, he had a list of who those people were, and almost all of them in the House are gone.
So he really wants him to pass. Do you think he will?
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that for a second. I've never thought that the whole idea of, as you say, three-dimensional chess, that, you'll take the heat off of the others. These will be the sacrificial lambs, and then they'll be defeated, and Trump will walk away. No. That's a misreading of Donald Trump.
So do you think he's going to pass?
No, I don't. I think that Trump will do a recess appointment, that they will fail, certainly Gaetz and probably Kennedy as well. I mean, I call them the two turkeys. There's no way, Brian, that they can reform these agencies. Matt Gaetz is like a missile. Okay, you want to blow up DOJ? But you're the president of the United States. You can't blow it up. You have to fix it. That's what your job is, to fix it, to make it work properly. That's why you were elected, not to destroy it. What are we going to take away? The Department of Justice, all the Bureau of Prisons, I mean, the Attorney General, we're not going to indict foreign terrorists. I mean, what does it mean to blow it up? But that's all Matt Gaetz is good for. He's like a human missile. He just destroys whatever he touches. So this idea that Trump will walk away from it, I just think it's a very bad idea. And the same with Kennedy. He's at best a gadfly. And once in a while, he says something that makes sense. But basically, he's a walking, talking conspiracy theorist. And you cannot have someone like this running Health and Human Services. I mean, these are important agencies. And it's a momentary pleasure to say, blow them up, start over. You can't do that. That's not realistic. You have to fix them. That's the hard job. And look, as president, you have a lot of hard jobs, a lot of things to fix. Do not think you can just blow them up and things will be better. They're too important for that. And so that's why I think these are mistakes. I think neither one will likely be confirmed. So I think that there will be a recess appointment, certainly for Gaetz and maybe for Kennedy. I guess there's probably a greater chance that Kennedy would be confirmed than Gaetz. But I think it's still more likely it'll have to be a recess appointment.
See, I think that, number one, I think the American people are really concerned about vaccines, and I think they're really concerned about food. So it doesn't come out of left field anymore where it might have a few years ago before the pandemic. Of all people, Dr. Burke said this over the weekend, Cut 18.
Well, I think the most important thing is what team he would bring with him, because you're talking about really a large cap corporation with a highly diverse group, which you have to really bring together. And frankly, eliminate some of the duplications that between these agencies to really become more cost effective. And so really having a management person at his side, a chief of staff perhaps, that has really come out of industry, that would know how to bring and look and bring those individuals together that are running the other agencies, because it's a very HHS is probably one of our most complicated departments.
She went on to say that we overpromised with the vaccine and didn't define it, that autism is a real concern and people wonder if vaccines are responsible. And he said when it comes to food, there's real things there that need to be reformed, and talked about how Europe did it. So I was shocked to see somebody who was a critic of Trump, who, you know, I thought to go out of her way, somebody who's from that institution, to give him to be open-minded about him.
Well, look, I think people will go along and make it work the best they can if there's no alternative. But that's up to the president. I think there are alternatives. I don't have a candidate. I just think that what has Robert Kennedy done that would tell you he's capable of running this organization? He's got ideas about some of the things they've done wrong, and maybe one or two of those ideas are on point. But overall, he paints this kind of conspiracy to rob Americans of their health and their money and everything, and everybody is bad, and he's the only truth teller. I can't accept that, Brian. I think that's such a simplistic view of these complicated organizations.
Let's try another topic. I want you to take this. Jen Psaki being honest, cut 33.
Look, I think Democrats are in the wilderness. As you just said before, there is no clear leader of the party. Mm. Joe Biden is going to be out of office shortly. Kamala Harris just lost the election. There are a lot of governors and other people who might emerge, maybe people we don't know about yet. Right. But there is no clear leader of the party right now.
I agree with that. Am I missing something? Is she missing something?
No, I think that's right. I mean, to me, the top two governors that the Democrats sort of hold in high regard, well, I make it three, actually, Whitmer in Michigan, Newsom in California, and Shapiro in Pennsylvania. But, you know, none of them wanted to run this time. None of them wanted to take a chance. And so they didn't challenge Biden, and the party has gone down. And look, you can wait too long. As somebody, I always look at the Chris Christie example, Brian. Chris Christie should have challenged Barack Obama in 2012. He didn't. Mitt Romney became the nominee, terrible nominee as it turned out. Chris Christie never really got another chance. Donald Trump came along in 16. That was going to be Christie's year. He waited for that. And then Donald Trump blew everybody away. And so you may never get another chance like the Democrats had this time. We'll see. But right now there's no sure thing. There's nobody in that party you can say is even the party leader. Once Joe Biden steps out of the White House, who's really running that Democratic Party? Chuck Schumer? Adam Schiff? Hakeem Jeffries? None of them, I think, Nancy Pelosi again, none of them really rise to that level. And so I think that they are in the wilderness, as Psaki says. It's maybe the first time I've agreed with her in some time.
I just love Fetterman says Democrats should stop freaking out of everything Trump does. An op-ed by Joe Manchin, the American people pick Trump, now is the time to deliver solutions for everyone, goes an op-ed. I think there might be a chance that the next group that emerges from the Democrats will be center left instead of way left. And they're going to look to squelch the squad because they embarrass them. They embarrass them. And Trump loves to label that the face of the other party as soon as they become the opposition again. Hey, it's been an exciting time. Do you know what you're writing about next, Michael?
I don't, Brian, but there's a lot of material here in New York with old Kathy Hochul and her congestion pricing hoax. I mean, it's unbelievable what she did. It was going to be $15. She reduced it to $9 and says it's a 40% savings. It's zero right now. So some savings. That's a government savings. But look, I think you're absolutely right about the Democratic Party. I think Psaki's right. And I think it would be great if the core centrists of that party would would squelch the squad, because the squad was kind of the scouts of the far left, and their success emboldened the party, and it went too far left. And that includes Schumer and Biden.
Oh, they're the worst.
They all followed along like lemmings.
Thanks so much, Michael Goodwin. Appreciate it. And what Michael's also referring to, congestion pricing just for driving in the city. So for people in New Jersey, Connecticut, New York that have to commute there, $2,000. Over $2,000 comes out of your budget. Idiots. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We do have concerns because our labor is barely where we need to do. We can't afford a labor shortage. Back during Obama, we had a labor shortage, and there were at times where we actually lost some crop. We left melons in the field unharvested, and we lost them.
I think people will look and say, but wait a minute, they're Americans who are unemployed. Why can't you just hire them?
They don't want to come out here and work in this extreme conditions, 100-plus degree temperatures, dust, hard work.
What if you paid them more?
It doesn't matter. We pay some of the highest wages for farm workers in the nation right here in California, and they won't come out.
So that is a farm owner in California, and where I think 20% of all our crops come from. And they say 40% of the workforce is illegal aliens. So it's bad. And you think to yourself, okay, get rid of them. But what happens is they're extremely hardworking. They've been showing up all the time for years, and they're doing the job that gets, you know, melons on our table and, you know, food into the stores. And if you got rid of them, what are we going to do? I think I have a theory on this. I think this goes about like they're maybe the 10th most important illegal immigrant group. And I think we could do something where we expedite people who have track records with work visas. They don't become citizens, but they can work here. This way, everybody pays taxes on them and we fill those jobs and nothing breaks between on the food chain.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If he had said, like, I'm going to ban vaccines, I would be very against it. But he said just the other day, he said, no, choice. If you want them, you have them. It's not going to be mandated. That's, I think, what a lot of people objected to before. I mean, I've said it many times. There are some pathogens that if they were going around, I would fight you for the vaccine.
Right.
And there are others that, you know, I just didn't want, like the one we just had.
There was a time in which he might have been he'd been asked to leave the country with that statement. That was Bill Maher on Friday. He's going to have a season finale next week, but weighing in on RFK and being a little atypical from the left, who suddenly have turned on him big time. But I'm more into specifically what he stands for and what he wants to do, from food to vaccines to overall health and streamlining a bureaucracy that has not been effective and, in my view, exposed during the 2020 pandemic. Dr. Marty McCary knows all about it. Professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, author of Blind Spots, When Medicine Gets It Wrong and What It Means for Our Health. Dr. McCary, first off, what do you think about his nomination? Are you glad to see it? Or is it worry you like other people in the medical profession?
No, I'm not worried about his nomination. I'm glad to see it. What I'm worried about is the current path we're on. I'm worried about the status quo. I'm worried about all the medical leaders who misled us in so many ways. That's what should be raising deep concern, not RFK Jr., who's now talking about the root causes of our chronic disease epidemic. He's actually talking about the health of the population. Up until this point, politicians have only talked about different ways to finance the broken healthcare system. Now he's actually talking about how to fix it by addressing health.
So I know he's a guy that was focused heavily on the environment. Guy came over to vaccines and other things and food a little bit later. It's going to be an interesting nomination process. He's going to have to defend all his beliefs. From what you know, is he prepared to do that?
Yes. I mean, if you look at what he is actually saying he wants to do in the job, how could anybody oppose this stuff? He wants to, number one, address healthcare corruption. Number two, return to good, solid research so we can use evidence-based medicine as the gold standard. And number three, he wants to address childhood chronic diseases. I mean, there's nothing partisan about that. That's why it was a top campaign issue. And that's why people united, parents from different sides of the political aisle, over this particular issue.
You know, what's interesting, too, is when it comes to vaccines, he's saying you can have a choice. But the way you guys have explained it to me, as explained to me, it's been explained to me in the past, is, well, we need everyone to get a vaccine, or is that going to be effective? Is that true?
Look, I think vaccines save lives, and I know Bobby Kennedy believes that. Now, whether or not you follow the rigid recommendations that are out there now, or say, for example, use the Japanese schedule or one of the accepted schedules in Europe, like the UK schedule, where they may not give the hepatitis B vaccine on the day of birth. I remember, hepatitis B is a sexually transmitted infection, and you get it from IV drug use. Do you need it on the day of birth? If somebody wants to make a personal decision and modify that and postpone it to later in childhood, we live in a free country. And so I think sometimes questions are good. Remember, this is the same establishment right now that's worried about a new measles outbreak. This is the same establishment that lost so much trust over the last 4 years. And that's why we're seeing less compliance. It's not because of Bobby Kennedy. It's because of vaccine mandates and cloth masks on toddlers and shutting schools down. And opioids are not addictive. For 20 years, we heard that. And the food pyramid, this is all dogma from the government. That's why people are skeptical, not because of Bobby Kennedy.
So do you know Dr. Richard Besser?
Yes.
So here's, he's a big opponent. Cut 25.
So it's not a matter of saying, oh, yes, you have access to your vaccines. It's pushing the idea that vaccines should be something that is totally up to the individual. We have a social contract in our country. There are things we do for our own health, but there are things we do that are good for ourselves, our families, and our communities. And vaccination falls into that category. And having someone who denies that in that role is extremely dangerous.
So that's what he's worried about. You heard that?
Look, just so you know, he is a former political appointee, and he is a he pushed vaccine mandates. He pushed cloth masks on toddlers. He pushed prolonged school closures. So that's the doctor we just heard from. If they would take 10% of their enthusiasm around the rigidity of the vaccine schedule and actually talked about our poison food supply or the toxic milieu or the chronic diseases or cancer going up in young people or early onset Alzheimer's that has tripled, or the fact that 40% of our children have a mental health diagnosis, where is the outrage and deep concern about those issues? I think we've been misled with leaders in healthcare that are not realizing what's happening. What's happening is we are watching our nation's children turn into a generation of patients right before our eyes. And more pharmaceutical products is not the answer.
Right. You know, the one thing, they also have a stat here. The share of kindergartens with vaccine exemptions has more than doubled over the past 10 years, I imagine mostly over the last three, from 1.6 to 3.3. And I know that doctors, I know some situations, doctors get mad when you ask, well, does my kid really need that? And there's some people legitimately concerned about autism and its link to vaccines. He has brought that up in the past. There's video about him in there or earlier, in earlier RFK, talking to Joe Scarborough. And they're both agreeing, why are all these kids getting autism? Does it have anything to do with it? But you can't bring that up because people go crazy. Listen to him talk about this. Cut 26, former CDC acting director.
This was a question that was asked and addressed decades ago. And to continue to lift that up is a cruel thing to do. We need to, as a nation, address chronic diseases in children. And one of the dangerous things about RFK Jr. is that there are bits of things he says that are true. And they're mixed in, and it makes it really hard to sort out what things you should follow because they're based on fact and which things are not. We should address chronic diseases. Autism is one of those, and spend money trying to understand what are the causes of autism and how can you address that. But keep lifting up the idea that it has something to do with vaccination is really a cruel thing to do.
Is it cruel in your mind?
Look, don't buy the fear-mongering. I mean, that's what you're hearing from Dr. Besser, who was the acting director of the CDC under President Obama. He's a partisan. This is the guy who was pushing vaccine mandates. You know, there is a vaccine schedule, and it is recommended, and it's out there. And RFK Jr. says he got his kids vaccinated, that he's been getting the flu shot every year, that he's not anti-vax. And I can tell you, in the limited conversations I have with him, he is not anti-vax. He is for vaccine transparency. Do we really believe this dogma we're hearing from the establishment that vaccines are an all-or-nothing belief system? Do they support the anthrax vaccine that was a total disaster and recalled? Do they support the initial rotavirus vaccine that was a total disaster and recalled for harming babies? It's not a religion. You've got to use the scientific process. And people like Dr. Besser are using fear, and people are not buying it anymore after 4 years of COVID.
I hear you. You know, Dr. Birx, by the way, I'm not going to play it for now, but she was actually more open to it. And she did something that I think Donald Trump's doing, asking questions about what we're reading. People are looking at these boxes, hearing this conversation, and instead of running from it, you have to stop asking questions on vaccines, on what's in your food. They're entertaining it, listening to it, and say, how do we address this? Rather than saying RFK is a crackpot. And you wrote a book about it, too, about what we eat.
Yeah, look, we have huge blind spots in modern medicine, and the food supply is something they never talk about, never. They're pushing... These medical establishment oligarchs are pushing Ozempic now for six-year-olds, and they never talk about the school lunch program and cooking classes for people with diabetes and other. It's all lip service, and so they're playing with people, and they're playing with fear. Ask one of these doctors, how many days of follow-up were in the initial safety studies of the hepatitis B vaccine that's now given at birth routinely? It was a five-day follow-up safety study. That's all we have on that. So, I mean, are you allowed to ask questions, or is this a new McCarthyism? And I think this is the battle for free speech, especially when it comes to health.
It's two things. It's either how dare you ask me? I went to school for this. And number two is I don't have the answer, so I'll back you off by making you feel less than whole or inadequate. So this Marion Nessel is a senior advisor in the Department of HHS from 86 to 88, said this about our food, cut 50.
I was told on my first day on the job that that report would never say anything about eating less meat, because if it did, the Department of Agriculture, under pressure from the meat industry, would prevent the report from coming out. So the idea that the food industry influences American food policy is an absolute given.
You feel that way too?
Well, it's amazing. We're listening to Marion Nessel, though. Marion Nessel gave us the food pyramid. I mean, one of the most flawed and corrupt nutrition pieces of misinformation ever to come out of the United States government.
Intentionally corrupt?
No, it's just that many of the people who wrote it were paid off, including my former head of nutrition at the Harvard School of Public Health, paid off by the food industry, and they never mentioned ultra-processed foods or sugars or seed oils or refined carbohydrates. So Marion Nessel may be right in the sense that there are special interests out there. They're trying to have influence, but this is exactly what Bobby Kennedy is trying to address as his number one issue. He said it. The number one thing he wants to address is corruption in our government health agencies.
Dr. McCary, thanks so much. I think it's such an important conversation, and I think a lot of it's going to come out in these hearings. And I think they're going to be surprised that he has a lot of answers. And if you're going to beat him, it's going to be you're going to beat him on ideas. You're going to bring up stuff. They're going to bring up stuff about his earlier days when, you know, he was living less than a perfect life. I don't really think that applies today. So they're going to have to go at his ideas. And then, like I said, you put management experts around him and talk about different ways to streamline. I think Elon Musk will be an ally, too. Final thought?
Look, I think the beatdown on vaccines that you're seeing in the media and this meltdown among some politicos, it's not about vaccines. It's about his broader agenda to address giant corporate interests in healthcare. And that's what they're really scared of.
Big audio, by the way, a great column in the Wall Street Journal today, how the left loved him until he left the left, and now they want to vilify him. thanks so much, Dr. McCary. Appreciate it. And go pick up his book. You will love it, and you'll learn a lot from it. It's called Blind Spots, When Medicine Gets It Wrong and What It Means for Our Health. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Last night, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson teamed up to defeat everyone watching.
It was totally right. I feel I absolutely robbed. I will never watch any chicanery with Tyson. He went in the ring, didn't try. He obviously, in my view, could have, you know, he was able to make sure he wasn't hit with any punches. Head was moving, but he wouldn't actually force the action ever. This guy is not even, I'm not talking about old. I didn't even see old. I saw a lack of ability or trying. You know what old would be? Taking wild, slow punches. But instead, he didn't throw any punches. I mean, really ridiculous. And I really feel like they put on a big show. Netflix couldn't even broadcast. It kept freezing. I was blaming my cable box. I had to move to three TVs in order to see it. When I finally saw it, I couldn't believe what a waste of time it was. And wasted 3.5 hours to get to it. It was just absolute abuse of the viewer. I don't know if you guys, if you were smart enough not to see it, it's not so much a guy got old or got beat up or he connected and knocked out the younger guy early. These guys absolutely played us for suckers, both of them. One got 20 million, one got 10. And by the way, I'm not playing you for suckers on the 15th. I'm going to be in Jacksonville at the Florida Theater, History, Liberty, and Laughs. We want to sell that place out. We're selling great. Got to keep it up, BrianKilmeade.com. And James, you're in Jacksonville. James, you know Gates. You understand he's the former congressman now. Your thoughts about Gates and RFK getting through?
Yes, great show as usual. Brian, love it. And I got in late on one of your callers, and I could tell from his voice that I knew the guy, but I don't know who it was. But he was really beaten up on Bobby Kennedy and Matt Gaetz. And through his voice inflection and then, of course, his content, he picked him apart and said, oh, gosh, this one will never get in there.
Michael Goodwin was our guest. I think it was Michael Goodwin, our guest. But go ahead.
Right. And it, to me, it was old guard. I mean, in real estate, if you have a house that's beyond its economic feasibility and they finally get to a point where, unless it's some vintage thing, they're not going to repair it anymore. They're going to crush it and build a new one. Now, I'm not saying you can do that with all of government, but with these institutions, maybe that's what we need. Look in history. Nobody knows history better than you, in my opinion. Maybe David Barton, but you're an incredible historian. Look at Frederick Douglass. Look at the people down through history that stepped out of lockstep, and they were trailblazers.
Right.
And they stood up for and stood on the truth.
Well, look, we're going to find out, because he's going to be going against the Judiciary Committee. He's going to have other people question him. He's going to be doing interviews, and he's got to say, this is what I'm going to do. He can't just come out and say food's bad. Vaccines in time, you can make your own choices. They're going to go, do you realize that some vaccines aren't going to be effective unless it's herd immunity? Do you realize what polio and what it was able to do and change around the country and save a whole generation from being inflicted with, God, FDR? And he's got to have answers. And when I listen with Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan had more questions than answers, but he's going to be dealing with other experts. And if he could stand up, you know, James, if he stands up to that questioning, these are supposed to be, the aren't supposed to be show trials. They're supposed to be legitimate questions about people that have to vote up or down. And I think that and the Gates and the Congressman Gates testimony could be pay-per-view. I think it's going to be wild. John, WOKV in St. Augustine. Hey, John.
Brian, hey, good morning. You used the perfect term just then. And we got to stop the left and the deep state and the system from doing it. It's a show trial against Republican candidates being put in by a president who just got in with a mandate, won the popular vote and the electoral vote. It is systemic in the system that they attack the Republican choices for all the cabinet positions and all the choices. Look back, Brian, when Biden got in. Did they ever put any of those candidates for trials and all of those cabinet positions ever and attack them incessantly?
I know what you mean. And you have a bad mayor who is a terrible transportation secretary. You had a secretary, a four-star general, just fall on his face because he's never organized a thing, just be actually terrible, no energy. We know about all his ill-defined decisions, not assert himself at all. And then, you know, you saw, I think Jake Sullivan's absolutely awful, but didn't face confirmation. Blinken's got a terrible track record. I hear you. But it was brought up, you know, it was brought up before. And I think Mark Wayne Mullen did a pretty good job on Sunday just saying what you just said. You know, it's nice to have questions, but where was that scrutiny when Biden was putting up these horrible choices and no one said anything about it? And we know how terrible they did. Like, I think Pete will be really good. I think RFK should be given a shot. And the thing is, if he falls on his face during the nomination process, then that's it. You didn't pass the audition. But this is an audition. And hopefully, if people just make speeches, they're not going to, I mean, it's, everything's just going to go on party line. It's going to get through. But if they get there, like, and they say, listen, we got some real questions, and here's some medical questions. You don't have a medical background. Why do you think you'd be able to organize this? What did they do wrong in the past? What are you going to stop? What do you mean about Big Pharma having influence? If you have all these questions, if he has answers and examples, he'll win over the public and make every Republican vote for him. Because remember, Republicans can do it, and they can lose four votes. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, which I understand is going to get a new focus when it comes to crime and punishment. Speaking of punishment, there's soon going to be a infrastructure tax, a congestion pricing. So now it's going to cost more to work in the most expensive city in the country, just icing out all working class people or all working people. Nice. President Trump's trying to stop it. But what can he do as president-elect? And New York City makes these rules. New York State actually makes these rules. This hour, we're going to be joined by Max Lugavere, health and science journalist, his podcast, The Genius Life, director of the documentary Empty Little Boxes. We'll focus on our food and what RFK is going to be looking at. He dealt with it personally, did a lot of his own research. Lucas Tomlinson is traveling with President Biden over in Brazil at the G20, and Lucas joins us now. So, Lucas, how's the trip been? Because after all, this is it. This is a swan song for the president of the United States. It doesn't seem to have the normal cachet that he usually has. Is it because they know he's only got a month left?
Well, Brian, it's great to be back. There's no question that's part of it. One of the most eye-opening parts of this trip, both to Peru and now here in Brazil, is that China is the top dog in Latin America. If you go back to the year 2000, the United States was the largest trading partner with every country in Latin America, from Mexico all the way here to Brazil, down to Argentina. Today, it's China. Over the weekend in Peru, Chinese President Xi Jinping was feted to a state visit. Biden was not. She did the ribbon cutting virtually from the presidential palace in Peru of a $1.3 billion megaport. The Chinese are kicking $3 billion more into that country. Those same honors came here to Rio. President Xi was afforded a state visit. Biden was not. And Brian, just a few minutes ago, after we talked on Fox and Friends, President Biden arrived to his first event here in Rio. The red carpet was laid out, and then he veered off the red carpet. He did not take the same route as the other world leaders. It's believed because a ramp was involved, a slight increase in the grade there, that all the other world leaders took. Biden did not. It looked like he went to a side entrance to use perhaps an elevator. What's notable, you know, unlike the G7 conference of allies, Russia is here. Putin's not, but his foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, is here. Of course, Chinese President Xi, who I mentioned earlier. So it's not all a meeting of like-minded allies here. While President Biden condemns, you know, Russia's large-scale war on Ukraine, not every world leader shares that view here in Brazil, and certainly not Brazil's president.
Yeah, fascinating, because, number one, President Biden deserves what he got. He made a choice. You know, he made sure he wanted – he thought Lula was a better choice for Brazil. And Bolsonaro has been basically alienated, exiled, even though – because he was looked at as a Trumper. But they knew when Lula came in, China would have carte blanche, and they're having it. Lula's background is, one, criminal. Number two, he was mentored by Castro. You know, he looks up to Chavez, Cesar Chavez. So what do you – Julio Chavez. So what do you expect? This guy's a communist.
Right. Banned X for a little while.
Yeah, he did that, too. So this guy has let all foreign influence in, and the guy that was trying to bring free market principles back is now out. And that's the bed that Joe Biden laid in it. Everything he's done has turned out bad, and this is just the latest example. Also, he tried to get Venezuela back in the fold by saying, hey, if you just promise to have free and fair elections, we'll start buying your oil again. And we did, and they didn't. How did that work out, Lucas?
where there's no question that China is the one who owns South America's United States presidents travel, they're always afforded the highest honors. That's not happening here. So whether it's from Venezuela here to Brazil, certainly in Peru, Mexico, Central South America, China is the top dog. That's been the most eye-opening part of this whole trip, Brian, is when President Biden's motorcade left Lima to go to the airport in Peru, people were flooding the streets with Chinese flags. Walking around the streets here of Rio, I see Chinese flags. I don't see any American flags. It's China that's the top dog here, not the United States.
And then that's got to be of governmental mandate because nobody likes China. I mean, that's not a beloved country. What do they do? The Belt and Road program is not endearing. It's extortion. But, Lucas, let's fast forward over to Ukraine, where you talked to me today and led me to the Bloomberg story that showed that the North Koreans are most likely heading to putting 100,000 of their fighters into theater to take on the Ukrainians. They have 10,000 there now trying to take back that one area of land in Russia that Ukraine took. Could you bring me up to date?
Well, that's right, Brian. There is this Bloomberg story that up to 100,000 North Korean troops are going to be deployed to Russia. There's no question that that played a role. Certainly President Biden's lame duck status did as well, having only 2 months left in office. But White House officials are saying that this is a game changer. Introducing North Korean soldiers on the battlefield, both in Russia and then in Ukraine, that's what led them to this decision, doing an about-face to let Ukraine use these short-range ballistic missiles that previously had only been used by Ukraine to hit Crimea. The Biden White House is now giving the green light for the first time to let Ukraine strike, but only in this region of Kursk where these North Korean soldiers were taken. Of course, it's very embarrassing for Vladimir Putin when Ukraine launched this counteroffensive into Russian territory. And that was back in August, Brian. A lot of people thought this was going to be a quick strike, quick incursion, go in, hit some targets, kill some Russian soldiers, retreat back to Ukraine or head back to Ukraine. Ukraine has owned a portion of Russia for months now. It's very embarrassing to Putin. He sent 50,000 of his own soldiers, and now North Korea is going. And, of course, North Korea has been sending artillery, but also short-range ballistic missiles as well. Of course, Iran is sending in their drones. And just in the last 24 hours, Russia launched its largest missile and drone strike on Ukraine. Of course, that was right after the German Chancellor Scholz spoke to Vladimir Putin. Those questions came up here in Rio when we were briefed by the Deputy National Security Advisor, John Feiner. You know, what was the result of that call if Putin just hangs up the phone and orders this massive attack? Bottom line, Brian, things are not going well in Ukraine. The front lines have been static for about 2 years. We're about to reach the third anniversary of this full-scale invasion in Ukraine. 57,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed. That's about the same number the United States lost in Vietnam, and in a much smaller timeline, not even 3 years. Of course, the Russians have lost twice that amount. But you don't want to get in a war of attrition with the Russians. That's what we've seen over the last few years, is the war is not going well. Yes, it's a great story that the Russians were not able to take Kyiv. There's no question. But if you don't mind the sports metaphor, that's the first quarter here, Brian. We don't judge a game just on the results of the first quarter. What we're talking about right now is where things are today. Russia still controls about 20% of Ukraine, and they're running out of ammo. That's why they were begging to use these attack-ems to hit some targets. Now, there's some people saying, why announce it like this? Why leak it to the press? Probably would have been better just to hit those Russian targets without them knowing this approval was given.
Yeah, that would have probably been a better tactic. So the question is, how do you get some more money there when the American well is running dry, especially with the new president? Congressman French Hill was asked about that. Cut 41.
Well, the Repo Act that was included in the national security package I worked on very closely with Chairman Mike McCaul of the Foreign Affairs Committee gives the United States the authority to not only take frozen assets but confiscate them and use them for the benefit of Ukraine. The loan you're referring to has been negotiated between the Europeans and the Americans to back the Ukrainian government. I believe that will go through, in my judgment. But I would urge President Trump, as he takes office, to actually follow the law and confiscate those Russian assets, as I believe that gives both Ukraine, the United States, and Europe a much stronger negotiating position with Russia.
Would the downside to the Repo Act, you were just breaking the norms in the banking cycle, like getting off the SWIFT system, it forces people to look again beyond the dollar, right?
Right. One of the big issues also, Brian, is Ukraine's president says that only 10% of the money that and weaponry that Congress allocated to Ukraine in April, remember that $60 billion yeah. package, only 10% of it has reached Ukraine. Who's to blame there? It seems like there's major logjam going on with the Pentagon and the White House. It's not clear what the holdup is. Certainly the RICO Act and taking Russian assets is certainly on the table as well, certainly on the table for the new administration. You know, there's about $300 billion in seized assets. Certainly that would not make President Putin very happy if they were seized, but certainly could be used as a bargaining chip in the negotiations, which some people think are coming.
So you're saying only 10% of the money that is allocated with equipment has reached Ukraine?
That's according to Zelensky. He went public with this. This is according to Zelensky. He said, what's going on? You guys are still slow walking the weapons. He was talking to the White House. He made a very public pronouncement about this. Obviously, a lot has happened in the last few weeks. So be forgiven, this story got buried a little bit. But Zelensky says only 10% of the weapons and money allocated by Congress has made its way to Ukraine. So all this talk about getting all these weapons and money now and to go full Winchester against Russia, if you don't mind that expression, that is not happened. Only 10% of the money and weaponry has made it to Ukraine.
And there's only that's the fault of this administration. I mean, there should be held to pay all the way down the line.
That's what Zelensky is saying. He pointed his fingers pretty directly at the Biden administration. Of course, he's been begging to use these short-range ballistic missiles, these ATACMs, as they're known, against targets in Russia. And really, this follows the script of this whole war, Brian. And we're about to approach the third anniversary, and it seems like at every turn, every major weapon system that Biden has approved has taken months and delays. It's meant more setbacks on the battlefield. Certainly tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers have been killed. I mean, just one more time, 57,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed, not wounded, killed. This cannot keep going like that. You do not want to get in a war of attrition with the Russians.
Right. But they say 700,000 Russians have been brought off the battlefield.
Correct. That's killed and wounded. Yes. It's more than double the Ukrainian casualties.
All right, Lucas, you're in you're in Brazil, but you still have your eye on the rest of the world. It's going to be real different when Biden leaves the scene. Also, I saw that he left the stage yesterday and walked into the jungle.
That's right. He was in Brazil yesterday. He went to the rainforest. He's the first sitting president to visit the Amazon. Of course, Theodore Roosevelt, after losing the 1912 election, he made a trip to the Amazon. That almost killed him. A little better results here from President Biden. He did visit the rainforest. He announced some more money for Brazil to preserve the rainforest. And that's what he did before arriving here in Rio.
Right. Just you shouldn't like leave and go into the rainforest. You should probably get the rest of your people. Lucas Tomlinson, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Brian, always a pleasure.
All right. Doing a great job at the G20. Soon he'll be following around a different president. It would be much more exciting. Believe me, if I know Trump, if he gets off and there's no red carpet there, he'll probably say, pull up the stairs, we're leaving. Max Lugavere at the bottom of the hour. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If you took away my workforce, you wouldn't eat. If you go into the San Joaquin Valley and you start doing what you're saying, it's over. The country will stop. It'll literally stop because the food system won't move.
And like Joe Del Bosque, he insists these undocumented farm workers are not taking jobs that would otherwise go to American citizens.
I don't care what you pay them. I don't care if you pay them $26 an hour. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, drive to the field, and pick fruit.
So that is the head of the Farmers League president, Manuel Cunha Jr., just talking about the reality of farms. He was talking about California, but could be the rest of the country. And they said a large number of our workforce, maybe 40%, are illegal aliens. But they're hardworking people that show up every day that we can count on doing jobs that Americans don't want to do. And even if you doubled it, he says it's not going to affect anything. But yet they said in past years when Obama got tough on work visas, they said that we just left food in the field. Doug in Indiana. Hey, Doug.
Brian, you there?
Yes. What's your solution to this?
So, you know, I disagree with the idea that Americans won't do those jobs. I think that's, you know, I get it. But at the same time, we've got a huge numbers of the population of young people that need to learn a work ethic and that are looking for work. And there's a lot of people that can't afford college. I think if you take high school graduates, you take young people that are college age that don't want to go to college and want to learn a skill, you put them into manufacturing and the government to provide incentives for them to go into manufacturing and agriculture.
These people think that's a non-starter. What do you think? I mean, why would he exaggerate the situation? Like, you think he wants to hold on to illegals?
I'm not sure what his motivation is there, but I think he's wrong. You know, I think that our country already spends billions of dollars on illegals through, you know, health care and through legal money. That money could be better spent and invested in young Americans. If manufacturers or particularly agricultural companies don't want to pay $15 an hour for an American, they'd rather pay $10 an hour for an illegal. They can continue paying the $10 an hour and the government can supplement that. Well, and that money could either go to the, young person.
I'm just saying his point is, look, I'm not an agricultural expert, Doug. And I appreciate you're saying this, but these guys say that Americans don't want to do the job. Here's more from what he said. Cut 46.
We need to figure out how we handle those folks versus the ones that are criminals, child molesters, whatever you may want to call that's been coming across the border. They've worked here for 30 years. Now you're going to throw them out of the country.
What about this thought, Doug? What if there was a way to expedite work visas, reform it? Evidently, the people in this system say it's antiquated. It's from the 1980s. And you get work visas for people that qualify. Let's say you have 15 years on the job and you got these farmers that'll vouch for you. So we have temporary work visas. From here on in, we'll have a new system, but only done after we seal the border. So I just think there's a difference between hardworking people coming here for a job. I don't know how they got here. They overstayed their visa, did something irresponsible, whatever. And I think by the time we get to them, because it's going to be criminals first, the ones that have been here for 10-year criminals, then you have the terror watch list, you have the daily criminals. ICE is going to be fanned out. They're probably not going to go to the cornfields of California. But when we get to them, the work visas, the student visas, where people have an incentive to stay here after we train them and help our tech center and maybe our management base and our engineer base, I think that could be all part of reform, but we can't even talk about all this until the border sealed and our and these people that are here illegally or have overstayed their visas are addressed. James, listening to KCRS in Odessa. James.
Hey, Brian. You know, I just don't think that it can be said as a blanket thing for every industry in America that if we get rid of the workers that are there, that American citizens will for sure go in. I don't think that's a fair blanket statement. I work out in the oil field, and I will tell you, when job openings happen, very few very few traditional Americans even apply for those things.
I hear there's a huge part of the oil workers, a huge part of the energy industry is used with illegal aliens. So we have to address it. And I got to talk to people in the industry, not ones looking to maximize their profit by hiring an illegal alien for half the price. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about industries they say they can't exist without it.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The thing that I really liked about him, people should think about going through this confirmation process. This guy actually cares about what kids eat.
And I'm into that now. I'm into longevity. We eat a lot of crappy food. We eat too much sugar, too much salt. This is very pragmatic stuff. So if you're appealing to a mother and telling her, look, I'm not going to ban potato chips. I'm not going to ban sugary sodas. But I want to educate people as to why they shouldn't eat them. And I think that's a great mandate. I'm all for it. Get them in there. Shake it up.
So that is Kevin O'Leary commenting on RFK taking over an agency that he thinks is too bloated, and he thinks food needs to be examined. Dr. Birx said the same thing. Dr. Deborah Birx, I know, big subtle opponent of President Trump during the pandemic, bad-mouthed him after he left office. And I was shocked to see this point of view from the former White House coronavirus coordinator, Cut 21.
Well, we're not talking about eliminating good food. We're talking about using all of their ingredients in a way that is more healthy for Americans. And I think that's what people are calling for now. Mm-hmm. Europe did it years ago. And I think we're capable of doing that. We are really smart, high levels of technology. We can make food tasty without a lot of these additives because we can see that other groups are doing it in a small way. So we're not talking about eliminating the need for wheats and grains. We're talking about putting those together in a healthy way.
So she's open to it. And I love that. Somebody from the institution, someone from the bureaucracy that was open to it. She knows it needs to change. Just like people who are in their 70s, 80s look at the Pentagon and are pro-defense but think it's got to change. It is too bloated. So how about this fact check when it comes to food? New York Times does a fact check on RFK's claims about a popular breakfast cereal, which we know is Fruit Loops. Remember, he keeps using this as an example. Well, the Times attempted to fact check RFK on the Canadian Fruit Loops. They don't have the same ingredients. The reporter admits the Canadian Fruit Loops get their color from carrots and blueberries. Well, I cannot believe I'm talking this much about Fruit Loops. Well, U.S. version uses red dye and blue dye and also have biolated hydroxylene, or BHT, a lab-made chemical that is used for freshness. The strange fact check, which seems to prove that RFK was right and disprove Kennedy's point. So basically, the fact check said they're using fake ingredients as opposed to Canadians who are using real blueberries and carrots. I had to read this four times. So now looking back at the fact check, Mr. Kennedy has singled out Fruit Loops as an example of a product with too many artificial ingredients. Then goes the ingredients listed above are all artificial. It's crazy. So this person, Brad Cohen, goes spinning out my coffee after reading the New York Times fact check on RFK Jr. Charlie Kirk writes, this is what passes for a fact check. The media lie a lot, but fortunately for us, they're also very stupid, which is true. Because you see in the New York Times, I expected to read this story and think to myself, okay, they're going to say, you know, it turns out the Canadians don't do anything different. Well, they do a lot different, and they use fresh ingredients. And Europe is even better. They straightened out their food, they say, 10 years ago. So let's go to the phones. Rick in North Carolina. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Brian. I just want to say about the immigration. I used to live in the Caribbean, and a lot of the locals used to go to Canada for the season to pick apples, and then they come back.
Right.
So I don't understand why these immigrants have to live here. Why not work here for half the year and then go back?
That's what I was talking about, work visas. You come here, you work, you go back. And a lot of them don't want to live here. You know, they'll come in, but they just said, by the time I get through the process, it's going to take years. I can't miss a season. So they'll go in and they'll send for their cousins and their friends and they'll go and they work. And you look at these farmers, they say they produce. The only thing that'll change, I think, will be automation. Somehow they find a way to go in and not pick berries manually or not push mangoes manually, find a machine that does it, like they do corn, I guess. So that's just it. I'm wide open to not knowing about this industry, but I like to know what this industry needs. You don't have to have a conversation about criminals and anyone from the terrorist watch list. And I don't want any more chain migration. You get in from North Carolina, Rick, and you're able to send for your family. I don't want that. I don't want the lotto either. I don't want random people getting in. We just need to set up a system that lets people, let's say they marry someone from another country, they want to come here and live. You shouldn't take thousands of dollars and years to make it happen. Go ahead, get your scrutiny, make sure it's not a mail order bride from Bulgaria and it's not some type of scam. After that, let them go. Don't waste a lot of manpower on it. But nothing starts until the border's sealed and the criminals start getting scooped up. But for those people just in these areas living illegally, but somehow doing it for the last 10, 15 years, they're not going to get to you for a while, thanks to Joe Biden, because he let over 10 million people in. Mary in Austin, Texas. Hey, Mary.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I have worked in technology for a very long time in all different types of industries and sectors. So I'm watching, like, on a macro level, you know, different developments of robotics and AI and all this tech, but I'm not really seeing where the developments make sense all the time. Automating fruit picking would be great. I don't think that's really been a focus, but they are automating all types of jobs that Americans do want to do. So is anyone going to take into consideration prioritizing AI and robotics development in order to automate jobs that people really don't want to do? It doesn't make sense to automate all these jobs that people want.
Right.
I don't think anyone's thinking about the long term that way.
Well, I think so too. But I think when it comes to the farming community, they're not without resources. They're very powerful. U.S. Agriculture Department is a very prestigious position. And I'm sure if there were things to pioneer and innovate R&D to get more automation into it, they'd be into it. I mean, they're not so caught up in tradition. So I hear you. You know, we're automating positions and having AI take over positions that Americans want. I know what you're saying.
For example, you hear people call a call center. Every single person that calls a call center wants to get a person on the phone, like 99% of the time. I want to talk to a human being.
Yep.
And yet every company has decided that the thing to do is to move further away from that. I guess I just don't understand why on a macro level. Again, it's not to indict any one company, but it just doesn't make sense to me.
I hear you. Thanks so much for the call. Mike in California. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah. So your last caller was saying stuff like, California property owners want to pay farm workers for less than minimum wage. And to my knowledge, I mean, you can't do that. You know, the labor laws still apply. If you start paying under minimum wage, then you're going to have a labor lawyer down your throat.
No, you're 100% right. And I think that's not the point. And one of the questions that Martha Raddatz, to her credit, she does good reports out in the field. She said, what if you double the price? In fact, here it is, cut 45.
If you took away my workforce, you wouldn't eat. If you go into the San Joaquin Valley and you start doing what you're saying, it's over. The country will stop. I mean, literally stop, because the food system won't move.
And like Joe Del Bosque, he insists these undocumented farm workers are not taking jobs that would otherwise go to American citizens.
I don't care what you pay them. I don't care if you pay them $26 an hour. It ain't going to happen. They're not going to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, drive to the field, and pick fruit.
So they say the money's not going to, you know, they say that money doesn't matter. People don't want to do it. So thanks for the call. I don't know what to say, except for this is going to be about the seventh wave of focus. I don't see them going into the farming community and grabbing these people out. I just don't. If there was a criminal enterprise going on, there's child abuse going on, labor laws abuse going on, absolutely. They should go all over it. But the point is, industrialized nations are looking at a huge labor shortage. They had less people to work, more people retiring, aging out in Japan, aging out throughout all of Europe, plus they don't work hard. And now you have a situation where people are pouring into it, able to work here because our economy is thriving, even though we're buried in debt. So Tony Gonzalez weighed in. You know, he's the veteran who has a district that has larger exposure to the border than any other in the country in Texas. Cut 47.
I think in his experience and in mine, what has happened is if you say I'm only going to enforce these laws and not the others, what's going to happen is these criminal elements are going to exploit that, whether it's single adult males, whether it's children, whether it's families, they will exploit our policies. So I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to say we're going to treat everyone the same and we're going to start enforcing laws. I think that's a good start. We got to surge immigration judges to the border, get cases heard in days, not years.
You've said that for a long time. That hasn't happened.
That works. I think that works. Under every administration, I hope the incoming administration uses that advice and surges immigration judges so people get their day in court.
It would be interesting, and I know what she says. They always talk about it, but here's the thing: when you get people to the border, They want to just turn people back in Mexico and then get their names and then call them when they're ready. Mexico's got to allow for that. And if not, the president's got to go in there. He doesn't really know this new leader of Mexico, and he's got to go cut the deal to make it happen. But that's only going to happen almost immediately. Blair, listening in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Blair.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
What's on your mind? Oh, good.
Hey, just real quick comment on the immigration stuff. These boys coming across the border, Mexicans, Guatemalans, anybody that's coming across the border that wants to be here to work, it's because our young people, I've got a son and a daughter, they work, they do what I need them to do. But we're not hungry in this country anymore. No, the one guy said, hey, we're not getting these people to come to work because we don't want to take, they're not taking American jobs. They're not. We're too lazy to get out in the field. The first time that Florida sun hits somebody's back when they're peeling potatoes, no way. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
look in the mirror. That's all we have to do is look in the mirror.
No, I hear you, and I don't think these farmers are not telling the truth. I'm sure they don't get up every day and think, how can I break the law? They think to themselves, how do I make a profit? How do I make my farm work? And also, the Midwest, the breadbasket, feeds the world. And in California, I think 30% of all of our fruits and vegetables come from California. Stuart, listening in Oregon. Hey, Stuart.
My idea is more on the immigrants that are staying in these motel rooms at $500 a night. They're not the ones picking.
I hear you. That's costing a ton of money. That's how we, instead of doing that, we use that money to give to ICE to go round up the criminals. Thanks, Stuart. Appreciate it. When we come back, we'll have more. We'll find out if there's indeed more to know, and we'll continue to follow these stories, the court cases that are taking place, the president's trip overseas, and, of course, the ongoing announcements from President Trump at a breakneck pace, filling out his nominees. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
What is hopeful, at least about RFK's message, is that he's spiritually connected in nature. He has spent his life litigating against environmental devastation.
He cares.
Well, he's a hunter, I know almost no people who are more spiritually attuned to animals than people who are hunters, because they study them, they think about them. He sued Monsanto, he sued GE for PCBs in water, he started the Water Keepers Alliance, he hikes all the time, we see it on Instagram, he speaks to ravens, you know, it's so... this is not. No, I mean he has a connection with them.
Yeah. See,
and I'm not trying to vouch
if
here.
If you could give him a little advice, just like not tell us everything.
Not don't tell us. Yeah.
You know, like we would be a lot. I didn't need to know about the worm in the brain.
No. But the broader point is that I think a deeper conversation about the spiritual connection between humans and the earth, and some compassion for our bodies and how they are being destroyed by the modern world, is a conversation we need to be having.
And that is Casey Means, been a guest on our show. So she's just explaining that it doesn't matter who I voted for. RFK would work because he gets the big picture. But the whole talking to ravens, killing a bear, dropping in Central Park, having a brain worm, things to that nature don't work to his credibility. It lets people go off. And by the way, Bill Maher was not in taking easy shots at RFK. He wasn't necessarily against it. This is what Bill Maher said. He said, I wanted two things. He said, I care about the environment. And I forgot what the other thing he cares about. I think world peace or something. And he goes, I lost on both counts because of basically the left is just unelectable and so unlikable because of the arrogance in which they conduct themselves. And that includes the celebrities that we see talking so much. Here's a little more from Casey Means. First off, here's RFK. Here's Bill Maher and RFK. Cut 29.
If he had said, like, I'm going to ban vaccines, I would be very against it. But he said just the other day, he said, no, choice. If you want them, you have them. It's not going to be mandated. That's, I think, what a lot of people objected to before. I mean, I've said it many times. There are some pathogens that if they were going around, I would fight you for the vaccine.
Right.
And there are others that, you know, I just didn't want, like the one we just had.
So that was, by the way, and as Dr. Burke said, he said, we lost a lot of trust, I'm just paraphrasing, because we said the vaccine could do more than it can do. Remember, if you get the vaccine, you can't get the virus. If you get the vaccine, it doesn't matter. You can go anywhere you want. Then after a while, I was like, no, not until everybody gets the vaccine. And then you could still get it just with the symptoms. It wouldn't be as bad if you had the vaccine already. Well, how do we know about that? Kept changing your answer. I don't want to go through that again. But among his critics, Dr. Jha. Remember, he worked for the Biden administration. It says, I worry about going backwards just at a time when we have made so much progress in American medicine. This with RFK. Dr. Paul Offit, a vaccine specialist in Philadelphia. The notion that a science denialist would head an agency that is built on science is frightening. He's not a science denialist, but don't let that slow you down. And Dr. Richard Besser, we have sound from, said, I think it would be extremely dangerous to have RFK Jr. as the Secretary of Health. I think he's got a lot better chance than Gates. I don't think there's any doubt about it, because I think he's got the answers. Gates might have the answers, but he's got to go prove himself and say, look, the old show, the showboat that you saw on Capitol Hill blowing things up, acting like an outlier. I won't be like that at Department of Justice. This is my view. He's got to change his image. And if he's close, Trump has so much, is so popular right now, people won't just go out of his way to blow him up. Sean, listen to Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. This is what he said in October about Congressman Gates. Cut three.
He was accused of sleeping with an underage girl. And there's a reason why no one in the conference came and defended him, because we had all seen the videos he was showing on the House floor that all of us had walked away of the girls that he had slept with. He'd brag about how he would crush ED medicine and chase it with an energy drink so he could go all night.
I mean, I need to know that. Talk about telling too much. But so a lot of people are critical. But now Senator Mullen's walking back. I'm going to listen. He said that Pete Hegseth is a yes unless I find out something else. He says Gates is a no unless I find out something else. Karl Rove, of course, a lot of people don't like Karl Rove who are Trumpers. But I think he goes with the facts. Cut five.
The guy has never been a practicing attorney with a steady practice. He's never prosecuted. He's never managed or run a law firm. And he's going to run the largest law firm in the world? I don't think so. So I think what this ultimately is, he's counting on being turned down with the idea that he then runs for governor or senator in 2026, saying, I was a victim of the deep state, and rallies the MAGA base in order to try and get there.
Well, it depends. That's not a bad strategy, but in the meantime, Governor DeSantis is going to fill Marco Rubio's seat with someone. If it's Lara Trump, that's not going to be open. I don't know. I mean, who could he put in there that isn't interested in running for re-election? That's hard to say. I mean, anyone who he puts in, unless they're in their late 70s, I think they're running for re-election. So I don't know if that's going to work. He could try to run for governor. Byron Donalds would beat him pretty handily, I believe. Hey, make sure you follow me. I'll be at Brian Kilmeade. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to get tickets to Florida Theater in Jacksonville, Florida for History, Liberty, and Laughs. A chance for me to meet you in person and for you to meet me. It's fantastic. BrianKilmeade.com.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.